Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Saul LeWitt, who lived from 1928 to 2007, was a pioneer of conceptual art and is considered one of the most influential artists of the second half of the 20th century. His artistic practice included wall drawings, structures, photography, printmaking, artist books, drawings, gouaches, and folded and ripped paperworks. The exhibition Strict Beauty, Saul LeWitt Prints is the most comprehensive presentation of the artist's printmaking to date, and it's on view at the Williams College Museum of Art in Williamstown, Massachusetts through June 12th. Curated by David S. Arford, Professor of Art History at the University of Massachusetts Boston, the exhibition is accompanied by an in-depth catalog co-published by the New Britain Museum of American Art, Williams College Museum of Art, and Yale University Press. I visited the museum recently, and David Arford met me there. David Arford, welcome to the Roundtable, and thank you for welcoming me to this exhibition at Williams College Museum of Art.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You've been working on this for 6 years. How did you begin working on it? What made you want to devote so much of your time to this particular exhibition? Tell me a little backstory. What do I need to know?
Well, I teach at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, and I really didn't know that much about Saul LeWitt until I visited Mass MoCA and saw the retrospective of wall drawings that opened in 2008 and is now up until 2043.
Right, they've extended it a couple times.
Yes, and I've gone every year, usually more than once. So I became very inspired by that exhibition. And then I discovered that he made prints, and I didn't know that at first. And most of my scholarship has been on printmaking. So that was my way in to working on LeWitt myself.
Where did he start with prints?
Well, he started with prints that you see on the opening wall of the exhibition.
Perfect.
And this is the first section on his earliest printmaking. And they date from 1947 to 1949 primarily, though there's some from 1950 as well, and then into his earliest years in New York City. So he discovered printmaking at Syracuse University as an undergraduate, his junior year. He was kind of struggling as an art major. They introduced a printmaking course on lithography, so working on a stone and printing from a stone. And he loved it. He took it 4 times.
Wow.
And thus the prints that you see at the top of this beautiful array of early prints are from his years at Syracuse. And then when he went back home to New Britain, Connecticut, he made arrangements to continue making lithographs in Hartford at the Hartford Arts School. And he did that in 1950, so the bottom group is from 1950. And he loved lithography. But you can see this wall, like many moments in the exhibition, I hope, will be surprising to visitors. So this wall, if we can move a little closer.
Of course, yeah.
Now, I should ask you, does this look like LeWitt to you?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. There's very little color, almost none. They're really dark. I was going to ask you if they are related to other printmaking of the time? Was he sort of impersonating another style or what other people were doing?
Right, you mentioned the monochromatic nature, but also, to me, the most shocking thing is that we have the human figure. These are scenes of urban life and figure studies and characters, typical urban characters, and definitely influenced by the art of the 1930s and 40s, more socially conscious artists like Reginald Marsh and other American artists. This explains in part the style and the representational nature, but also they have a kind of political and even satirical edge to them. There's this great image of a politician on the far right that looks vaguely like a recent president of our own.
It really does. It really does. It's startling, nearly, yeah.
It's startling. But he loved lithography because he said in a later interview that he found it very graphic and experimental. And I think by that he meant that it freed him up in terms of his drawing. There were no rules. So many artists like working on a lithographic stone because it's very flexible and forgiving. You can draw in a traditional way, like making it almost looks like a charcoal drawing. You can also deliver the lithographic touche as a liquid form, so kind of paint the image. So you see that kind of mark making, wet, dry, additive, but also subtractive. So there's lots of scraping and scratching combined with more traditional additive mark making. So it really tapped into his love of drawing. And while they are very different from what came later, I think the love of different types of line and mark making, you can see that in his mature work as well.
The center one looks like it's a dove. Yes. The center one is a dove. It looks like it, not a lithograph, but maybe a woodcut or a lino cut?
Yes, it's a woodcut. So there are three woodcuts that survive from this early period. It seems that he wanted to explore different types of printmaking in terms of improving his graphic design portfolio, because his plan was, after finishing at Syracuse, spending part of a year at an MFA program at the University of Illinois, which he quit, he wanted to create a portfolio that he could present to employers in New York City. So he had decided he would become a practicing artist, and graphic design was his entry into that world.
Strict Beauty, Saul LeWitt Prince is on view at the Williams College Museum of Art in Williamstown, Massachusetts through June 12th. We're speaking with curator David Arford.
The exhibition, you know, opens with this great wall of early prints, but it explores his mature printmaking, which begins in 1970. So there's a kind of gap. He is a type of artist that really had to warm up in terms of his direction. It took him over a decade in New York City, really, to find his way. Some of it was fairly bleak. He talks about that. But eventually, by the mid-60s, he has his first one-man show in 1965. And that's a show of sculptural works that he called Structures. Mm-hmm. And then his first wall drawing is in 1968. Pencil on a wall, lines in four directions, his famous bare bones kind of visual language. But then in 1970, he embraced printmaking as well, returning to this medium that clearly he knew a lot about from his college days. So the exhibition is laid out in four sections that explore the mature printmaking, which begins in 1970. The first section's called Lines, Arcs, Circles, and Grids. And as the name suggests,
it covers a lot of ground, honestly.
This explores his various linear visual vocabularies: straight lines, freehand lines, not straight, broken lines, as well as arcs and circles and grids. We see an array of beautiful series in front of us. This is a great example from 1971. LeWitt, by this point, of course, was famous for drawing lines or having others draw lines. Mm-hmm. And of course, I assume your audience mainly knows LeWitt through his wall drawings, as well as perhaps his modular structures, sculptures. But from very early on, he worked in other media as well, various diverse modes. So wall drawings, structures, various works on paper. He made books, he did photography, and he made prints. So one thing that I want this show to do is really open people's eyes to the diversity of LeWitt as an artist. Because really we only, normally when you visit a museum or a gallery, you're only seeing a small part of his art practice. So LeWitt, because of his love of printmaking, definitely when he was a young artist, he realized its potential for fulfilling his conceptual goals. And it was perfect in terms of creating or expressing his ideas. So in part, he liked its efficiency and practicality. He could work with a master printer and do, as he said, a minimum amount of work.
Sure. Well, the wall drawings are a huge amount of work for a lot of people.
That's true. But LeWitt liked to kind of launch an idea into motion and then back away and let it occur, or let a group of assistants or drafters, or in this case, a master printer, create the work from his directions. So this is a good example. He made this at Crown Point Press in 1971. This series of 16 prints depends on only two plates that LeWitt worked on directly. And the first plate has a drawing of parallel lines in a band across the center. And then the second plate that he made for the series has parallel lines from corner to corner, a band of parallel lines. And then you could take those two plates, and he drew a little diagram for Catherine Brown, the founder of Crown Point Press and the master printer who made this. You could take those two plates and then print the first four prints, so a band of lines across the center horizontally, a band of lines across the center vertically, then from left to right, from corner to corner, and then from right to left, and print them in black, yellow, red, and blue, and just turn them as you're printing them in different colors, and then every two-part, three-part, and four-part combination. So it was a very efficient way to create a series, but also to be involved in a certain level at the beginning, but then to step away and let the series happen without his presence. So this fit his overall model of conceptual art, where he wanted to create a distance between himself as the artist or author of the idea and the final product.
Do we know, and I obviously don't, that's why I'm asking, do you know why he wanted to create that distance, how that became a part of his practice to create distance between the concept and the execution, or implementation might be a better word?
Well, LeWitt, like others of his generation, were responding to the artwork that came before that was so popular in the United States in the early years when he arrived in New York in the mid-50s, and that was abstract expressionism, which was so invested in the personal and expressive and the personality of the artist who created the work. LeWitt and Dan Flavin and other artists that were his friends really wanted to rid art of that component of the personal and this personality and signature style. So by emphasizing the concept over the final work of art and setting it in motion, as I said, this created a distance where the artist could not interfere in terms of their personal feelings or their desire to express themselves. That's the explanation for why he was interested in this space, but he found it very productive. By removing himself, he allowed the idea to be carried out, and it often resulted in an experience for the viewer that was something he couldn't predict. And he liked that component of not always being able to predict the outcome. And I think that's something that people misunderstand about LeWitt, is that he really leaves a lot of room for viewers to experience the work and to have their own kind of subjective experience, but also very complicated perceptual experiences, as you'll see throughout the exhibition.
I have, in most of my viewing of Saul LeWitt, I like the ones I like, and I don't like, I'm like a really just like impulsive museum goer. I like the ones I like, I don't like the ones I don't like. And then if I try to understand the kind of equation behind some of them, then I like everyone based on the fact that he explained it in these like crisp ways that became something on the wall or something in one of these prints.
So you like that quality about LeWitt. Yeah, some people have this misconception that it's going to be complicated, but actually LeWitt's ideas are fairly straightforward and simple. People often wondered if he knew, you know, he had a kind of complex understanding of mathematics.
It does seem like it.
But he actually said in an interview that he knew nothing about mathematics, that the systems that he used in his art practice were really just ways of bringing order to his ideas. In this first section especially, these diverse linear languages, one thing that I want visitors to think about is how their experience of LeWitt changes because he's presenting ideas that overlap the wall drawing, some of them, but they're presented in print form. So the shift in scale, the change of material, creates an entirely different experience. If you know the wall drawings, they're basically architectural and spatial experiences. Here, some similar ideas are reduced to sheets of paper. He can explore more complete series on one wall through multiple prints. Also at this scale, and up close and personal in this way, they resonate in a very different way with art and visual culture broadly conceived. So I think throughout the exhibition, the viewer is reminded of different types of graphic and notational visual languages from science, from music, from cartography. And I think he was interested in you seeing that, but you don't see it necessarily, or you're not reminded of those things when you're looking at a huge wall drawing, a monumental work. But when it's reduced to a sheet of paper and it's framed on the wall, like this series, for instance. So this series called Lines and Color on Color to Points on a Grid from 1978. These are color screen prints, a set of nine, explores, as the title suggests, lines, so radiating lines from the corners, from the midpoints of the sides, and from the middle, in the primary colors, so red, yellow, and blue, and combining those lines and those colors with backgrounds of the same colors, right, mm-hmm. on a grid, this really fine grid printed in gray. He talked about these particular works in terms of geography and the idea of the lines moving to, toward, and through space. Mm-hmm. They definitely resonate in terms of map making. So we include an illustration here on the wall label of a 14th century Portolan chart. This is a chart from the late Middle Ages and the early Renaissance for navigation, which includes radiating lines on a grid with the coastlines of the Mediterranean Sea and these various locations. This was a way to chart your trip by boat. Mm-hmm. So these look so similar to...
They really do.
Yeah,
it's wild.
Examples. So, of course, there are no coastlines or actual earthly locations. So it's, of course, a pictorial, a visual... abstract kind of trip that you're taking, a journey through this beautiful space defined by red and yellow and blue.
David S. Arford is the curator of Strict Beauty, Solowit Prints, on view at the Williams College Museum of Art through June 12th.
So the exhibition is laid out in a kind of rough chronological way, but there are moments throughout the exhibition where we see that he worked on similar visual languages throughout his career. So this opening section, it starts in 1970, and it deals with these diverse linear vocabularies that he used. But he explored this kind of linear language throughout his career. So for instance, there's this beautiful set of six prints, not straight lines, from 2003. This is a series of etchings of not straight lines, as the title suggests, but you notice that they're laid out so the series progresses from these wavy lines, not straight lines that are...
Not touching each other,
very much on purpose. Mm-hmm. And then the second print, they get closer and they become a little more crowded. And then the third and fourth print, they become more agitated, as if they're recording some kind of seismic event. Mm-hmm. And then by the final two prints, they're really alive with movement and they're so dynamic. This is an important point that the exhibition makes. Most people think of Lewitt as someone who just came up with ideas and a set of instructions and others carried it out. But in his printmaking, we see that he worked directly on the prints when he was creating line etchings and aquatints and lithographs. So here we see his actual hand, the hand of the artist, something that was really lauded in that earlier generation of the abstract expressionists. What I love about these prints, these small plates, is that he's working directly on this plate and making these lines with an etching needle. And you can really engage, you know, in a close-up personal way with these marks that begin at one edge and end at another. And then he adds another. You get this sense of the temporal component of making them, and also his commitment to making them. This was a key part of his art making, is that once the idea was set in motion and you began it, you ended it. You know, you carried it out to its end. It didn't always result in something that he liked.
Oh, okay.
Not always. He did complain about some outcomes. But he usually would sign off on them because it's what he began, it was the idea,
okay.
And he executed it. So I love that these are beautifully executed, and the result is something very interesting about movement and rhythm, which is and this kind of lively drawing that he carried out to the end of his career.
Yeah, that's 2003, was only 4 years before he died.
Right, exactly. So the second part of the exhibition is called Bands and Colors. And in the 1980s, the mainly drawn lines that had defined his work, they morph into bands. They become wider, they have more density and presence and weight. And at a certain, on a certain level, it's quite impersonal, but they become very bold and graphic so that you can take them in from a distance. You know, we really don't have to get close necessarily. For instance, his Lines in Four Directions, we see in this woodcut in the corner, which in the past, before this, he had drawn, right, using a straight edge. So here, they become these wider, darker bands that are very consistently created. This is a woodcut from 1982. And during this period, in 1980, he moved to Italy, and he was a great fan of Italian Renaissance architecture and fresco painting. And he admired churches in Florence, for instance, like Santa Maria Novella, which is pictured here on the wall label. This is a famous facade by Alberti, and LeWitt praised it as one of the most, you know, this incredible masterpiece of geometrical design. But it depends on the use of decorative bands of marble in light and dark colors that divide up the facade. So this is one of his influences in terms of this moving towards bands. He often said that Lines in Four Directions was his artistic coat of arms. So here it becomes like a coat of arms, right? It looks like heraldry, like the stripes of heraldic shields. So bands becomes the kind of typical mode in the 1980s and 90s, overlapping his linear languages, which continue to the end of his career as well. During this period, he also experimented with color. So he started making works that were depend on the primary colors, yes. So yellow, red, and blue, usually plus black or gray. But here he started to layer them in these transparent or translucent layers so that you could see through the layers, so that you get mixing of color. So you get the secondary colors and other hues, and you can see that in this particular woodcut as well. This is made from 12 blocks, separate blocks, and printed in the Japanese style of woodblock printing, where you brush on the colors, and then you lay the paper on top of the block, and then rub it with a pad instead of a press.
Right.
But you can see the subtlety in this. This was very surprising at the time. This print is from 1993, Bands of Lines in Four Directions. But this corresponds to the wall drawings as well, where he started to use layers of color ink, which created these same subtle effects.
It's also a very autumnal palette for Saul. Here we go.
Well, yes, that's true. From kind of moving from the primaries to this more subtle kind of approach to color in layers. Some have said that it's partly because of his move to Italy in 1980, that these subtle colors of fresco painting show up in this way in LeWitt's work. But by the 1990s, he was doing something different with color. This is a highlight of the show. It's called Lincoln Center Print from 1998. And this is a silkscreen print that was commissioned by Lincoln Center and issued as a limited edition screen print, but also was produced as an inexpensive poster to advertise the mostly Mozart festival. LeWitt was a lifelong classical music lover. He also liked avant-garde modern music by friends like Philip Glass and others. So he jumped on this commission. He definitely wanted to do it. And he said that this print was a turning point in his artistic life or his practice. He thought it would just be a kind of one-off, and then he would move back to what he was doing. So we're looking at this print, and it really looks like The way that it's different is it's very musical. It's overtly musical. There are quite a few prints in the show that you could compare to music in terms of rhythms and musical colors. Here, this looks like a piece of sheet music that's kind of expanded, right? The staff lines have opened up, and we have these wavy, really thick bands at the top, and then irregular kind of vertical bands, and then more wavy bands, and straight bands, and curving bands. And notice the color. So instead of layers of color that create subtle mixes, here they're just bright, opaque colors. The primaries, the secondaries, and gray with this great black frame.
It's incredibly vibrant, and the inclusion of gray makes the colors really, really pop, because, you know, you kind of like sink back into the gray a little, and the color's like, no, I'm here too.
Exactly. I mean, they create just a little bit of buffer, I guess, for our eyes. So this really impacted the wall drawings. So this is a good example of where he's doing something in prints that then he does in wall drawings. So the wall drawings become really bright, kind of over the top in terms of their visual languages. You know, there's still some rules. You know, the colors are pretty restricted in terms of the primaries and the secondaries. And he's, you know, pinned them in by using these black frames. But for him, this truly represented a loosening up, the breaking of his rules. So by this point, 1998, he felt a bit restricted by the rules that he had set out early in his career. So the third section of the exhibition is the largest section. It's titled From Geometric Figures to Complex Forms. And this is the section where we deal with his use of geometric visual languages. And it has works from every decade of his career. So this is the section where, you know, people think, okay, math.
It does look like some figural drawing, and there would be equations involved.
Right. LeWitt was interested in geometry, in a very simple geometry. He wrote a short piece on the cube, for instance, the square. And he liked cubic forms because he felt the cube was the least expressive of geometric forms. So he could use it as a perfect armature for variations of color and position. And then he added some other geometric figures to that. So we have, you know, circles and triangles and rectangles and trapezoids and parallelograms. And those became his go-to geometric figures. And you can see in these works, he's doing what he did earlier with his linear languages. He's superimposing these geometric figures. He's showing them in the primary colors and every combination of figure and ground in terms of color. But as I said earlier, LeWitt said that he knew nothing about mathematics. This was just a way to create order to his ideas. And his geometry is really quite playful. So this section shows you how playful it is. So there's a series of prints that are called distorted cubes, which they're distorted, exactly the title suggests. They're elongated, or they're stretched out horizontally. It's like a crazy multicolored assortment of gift boxes.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it.
You know, hiding something very interesting inside, no doubt. You can see the bands are used to describe different geometric figures as well. But for instance, this moment over here, as we round this wall to the end of the gallery, you can see how playful this geometry is. It embraces not just the geometric figures I mentioned, but also stars become important in the 80s and 90s. Stars. They're geometric figures too, right?
They're just like us. Wait, no, that's not what you're saying.
So, you know, he liked them because he could create these simple mathematical progressions, like this series of seven, where you start with a star with 3 points, and then 4 points, then 5 points, and 6 points. Very simple, straightforward, kind of beautifully elegant. But then this work, this not a series, but a single image, a single print, this beautiful lino cut of a six-pointed star.
This is a lino cut?
Yeah, so he made woodcuts and lino cuts, essentially creating a drawing, a design that then was translated to blocks of linoleum and then cut just like a woodcut.
Yeah.
And you can see these are in the bold, opaque colors, the primaries, the secondaries, and gray. So the six-pointed star should resonate, and this definitely does in terms of his own biography. So this is a rare moment where he's tapping into his Jewish heritage. This particular print from 2005 is connected to a painting that he made for his local synagogue. So his synagogue in Chester, Connecticut, is the only building that he had a part in designing. And he created a wall drawing, essentially, that decorates in acrylic paint the holy ark that holds the Torah scrolls. And this print is based on that design. So this is definitely meant to be the Star of David, and it's this celebratory, you know, reclamation of a symbol that had been used to stigmatize Jews in Nazi-controlled Europe. So it's quite beautiful in terms of the way it moves. It's using bands, but broken bands, so we have all these colors and these little broken bits. So there's this great movement of a circle in the background, and then the star itself seems to morph in and out as we look at it. So there are several moments in the exhibition where we see a more personal LeWitt, and that's something also people aren't used to. They think he's pretty cool and detached. I thought that for sure when I first started to investigate him.
It's a pretty hip reputation to have, honestly.
That's true. That's true.
It's not worth everything.
But that means, I think, because that is a perception that people have, it's a misleading one, because it suggests that there isn't really anything personal or social or political in his work. And yet there are moments when he let himself go there and create something that was revealing, that was personal, even emotional. And I think this particular print is one of those moments.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
Strict Beauty, Saul LeWitt Prince, is on view at the Williams College Museum of Art in Williamstown, Massachusetts through June 12th. We're speaking with curator David Arford.
So I wanted to look at one final thing in this section of the exhibition. So his geometry is quite playful in ways that people really don't know, and even personal, as I suggested. But also, by this point in the exhibition, you see that we've moved from those strict geometric figures to more inventive forms. So he called this visual language complex forms. And it looks, it's made up of mainly triangular facets. It looks a little like the piece of paper has been folded, or like you're looking at the surface of a geode or something with all these different facets. So it's interesting that by the end of the section, we see that the geometry begins to fall apart. It becomes almost formless. So these themes of form and formlessness take over. And in this particular print from 1991, which is called Color in Black, I mean, look at this print. You really have to get up close to engage with it, and it's unlike anything that people know about LeWitt. This is done in a technique called a spit-bite aquatint. It's where you paint essentially the acid onto the plate directly, and it starts biting into the plate. So it's very hard to work with. But here we have these facets, these kind of triangular facets, but they all bleed into each other. It's probably the most evocative kind of poetic print in the exhibition, because it seems to rely on no rules in a very intuitive kind of mark making. And this is where the geometry goes, in a place that is unexpected.
I love
it.
So
shall we go to the last section?
Let's go to the last section. Wavy, curvy, loopy, doopy.
Right, so here we are in the last section of the exhibition. Wavy, curvy, loopy, doopy, and in all directions, which describes the visual languages that appear in the last 15 years of LeWitt's career. And these are among the most unabashedly beautiful and decorative visual languages that he created, and also the most painterly. So on a certain level, it's a way for him to return to creating works that are about painting, which of course is something he was really engaged with early in his career. So here, when you look around the room, some of this should be familiar, maybe from the wall drawings, like loopy-doopy. That language is quite well-known with these controlled and very precise bands. This serpentine kind of band that looks a little botanical, like a vine that's growing.
And some of them, especially depending on the your level of color blindness, but also the colors chosen, it's hard to look like right at it sometimes.
Yeah, the combinations of colors that really reinforce each other and vibrate visually, he definitely was engaged with that. This work, Whirls and Twirls, Color, this is from 2005. Wow, it's has these bright, opaque colors again, primaries and secondaries, in this incredible, as the name suggests, it's whirling and twirling and moving its way across this sheet of paper. And again, we're looking at a lino cut, a really intricate and beautifully made lino cut. And this...
I could never make this.
So LeWitt worked with some of the best master printers. And in this case, he was working with Joe Watanabe, who was a master printer who is responsible for over half of LeWitt's print projects. Watanabe set up a print studio in Brooklyn and became the go-to person for LeWitt in terms of his printmaking. This particular Whirls and Twirls Color from 2005 is based on a wall drawing that LeWitt created for a library in Italy. And it's actually not properly a wall drawing, it's actually on the ceiling of this particular library. And on the ceiling of this vaulted space in Italy, it looks a lot like a Baroque ceiling decoration, you know, full of movement. It looks a little like a stained glass window too. But here, the print turns this design into something totally different again. So it's now we're looking at it at a smaller scale, and we can engage with it up close. And I think here it resonates in a different way, as I was saying earlier. It reminds me a lot of medieval manuscript illumination or early medieval metalwork, where there's a lot of linear design and tight interlace, kind of knotting. And, you know, it looks organic, it looks like it's something of the sky and of the earth simultaneously. So again, this is a good moment where there's a connection to a wall drawing, but the print gives you something totally different in terms of the experience.
And then these don't look like anything I've seen before.
Yes, it doesn't look like LeWitt at all. So let's look at the series of six. Here it looks totally freeform, right? We have these, we're looking at the series of six prints called Brushstrokes in Different Colors in Two Directions from 1993. This is an example of Sugarlift Aquatint. It allowed LeWitt to work directly on the plates again. So for his etchings and aquatints, almost always he was doing the mark making. So here we have, you know, it's almost 4 feet high, and it's the full reach of his hand and arm, this brushstroke that goes from the top to the bottom and from the bottom to the top. And even though this looks totally intuitive and freewheeling, there's still a LeWittian system at play. So Brushstrokes in Different Colors in Two Directions. Each of these prints, six prints, uses six plates. The first plate is a solid color for the background in yellow, red, blue, gray, black, and white. So that's what we see underneath. You could get little glimpses of it. And then the other five plates were printed in the remaining colors. So each plate had brushstrokes, these long brushstrokes, vertical. They were printed in each of those colors, and then they were turned 180 degrees and printed in another color in a different order. So the plate is rotated and then printed on, they're printed on top of themselves. So we get brush strokes from, in two directions, as it says. The two directions are from the top and from the bottom. And you only get that because they turned the plate itself, the matrix, the print matrix. And so we see that throughout the exhibition. He quickly kind of homed in on print-specific, medium-specific capabilities. So capabilities of printmaking that aren't available in other media. Mm-hmm. So you can turn the plate. That's something he discovered.
Right. And can't turn the building if you're doing a wall drawing.
The wall or the building. So he used this rotational system, and it was a way to assert control. It's a system, but then the results are kind of about relinquishing control because he wasn't sure what he would get. So here, for instance, even though we have these basic colors that are used, look at the way that they blend together in these transparent layers of ink. So we get this cascade of, you know, it's definitely over 20 more colors that rain down.
And they look so different depending on which color was the background color. And I guess everything else, every other way they interact. It's incredible.
Yeah, so even though, you know, by the end of the show, you know, you're used to the idea of there being a rules or a system. But this gallery especially, as you said, it looks like all the rules have been thrown out. But as the title of the exhibition suggests, Strict Beauty, there was always something regulating his visual languages. Even if he loosened up the rules, he was always confining himself to certain parameters that helped control what he created.
This has been marvelous. Thank you so much for all of your work on this exhibition and for talking to me about it.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
David S. Arford is professor of art history at University of Massachusetts Boston and the curator of Strict Beauty, Saul LeWitt Prints, which is on view at the Williams College Museum of Art through June 12th. To learn more, visit artmuseum.williams.edu. Once again, the website for the Williams College Museum of Art is artmuseum.williams.edu. I'm Sarah LeDuc, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.